204 DGS on KMOX. Gorgeous day out there. Wheels, let's talk some sports.
All right, let's go. What do you want to talk about?
So, JC?
Thomas DeJacy, yeah.
Wow.
Cardinals prospect.
I mean, I know it's just one day, but...
Yeah, no, dude can hit, man. I mean, he's having a really good spring. He was 4-for-4 yesterday for people that missed it. He's been getting a little bit of time at shortstop, but most people that evaluate prospects think more likely second base or maybe left field someday.
And there's another guy that played short, too.
Nick
something? Yeah. African-American dude? Looks really good.
I think I missed it.
Okay.
I think I missed it.
Yeah, I was watching. He looked really good.
But they have a couple of good young players. Obviously, we've talked a lot about Victor Scott, the speed guy.
Yes.
Who is the long-term center fielder. The question is, when does that begin? Whether, you know, doubtful opening day. It's not impossible. I mean, he's having a decent spring, and he's a great defender, and he's one of the fastest people in the game.
And where does he, I mean, other than obviously experience, where does he lack to be ready?
He's got to prove that he's going to hit older pitchers. Like, he really hasn't had a lot of experience. He hasn't had any AAA experience. He did go to Arizona Fall League and hit well there, but it's also a hitter's league. And by that, I mean high elevation, ball carries, and there wasn't a lot of pitching in the Arizona Fall League this year, so it's not an easy indicator. But yeah, once he proves that he can hit reasonably well, again, and he's not a big power guy, but a little bit of pop, but mostly contact and speed-oriented. If he proves that he can hit older pitchers who know what they're doing.
Nice to see those guys having success.
Yeah, and so JC can hit. We know that. He can hit. He's hit at every level. He hit, I want to say, 28 home runs last year, 26, 28 home runs.
He played third yesterday, right?
Yeah, and he can play second, third. They're giving him a little look at short. He might play the outfield at some point.
Gorman looked good.
Gorman's looking fine. Normal spring. Jordan Walker's had some moments where it's not been great, but the pop has been there, so that's been good. Yeah, they're in an interesting spot now, though. They don't have a ton of young hitting prospects that are close, right? You got a couple, and they're good. Mm-hmm. And I'm really excited about Sejasi because he could be a guy that helps them this year. In fact, I expect he will at some point be a part of this year. It just depends on when that is and then where he's going to play.
And how good are the good guys doing? Your Arenados and your Goldies.
Mixed. I mean, like, it's good. Arenado's hitting okay. Goldschmidt's hitting okay. Like, the thing with those guys is, this is why spring training is such an interesting time, right? And we can tie this in because I know I had on the sheet some things about the Cardinals pitchers. You know, Lance Lynn, Steven Matz, and Kyle Gibson have combined to pitch 10 innings so far, and we're 2.5 weeks from opening day. That's a little bit worrisome, but it's also part of the plan because they're older. They're not trying to, they don't want to do too much now. They want them to be saving the bullets.
And why did Lynn get kicked out?
Because he's arguing with the umpire. And
isn't Hernandez kind of...
Angel Hernandez is the worst.
Yeah.
As Ronge would put it, he's the biggest dingus amongst the umpires in the major leagues. He is... not only is he a jerk, he's bad.
Yeah.
Like, he's just bad at the
job.
You ask any player... I have never talked to a player or seen a player that says he's not... that doesn't say he's the worst umpire in baseball. He's bad at the job, and he's a jerk.
I thought it would take a lot to get kicked out of a preseason game.
Yes, that's everybody's point. Like, you know, relax.
Let the man work.
Like, if he's barking at you a little bit, it's the spring. Let it go. You don't need to be throwing people out in the middle of the second inning, third inning of a spring training game.
Yeah.
Like, relax. It's okay if he's, you know, a little bit irritated or if he comments on. But that's Angel's reputation, though, is he's very sensitive. So you can't say anything to him. You can't bark at him because he immediately loses his mind. So there's some concerns, I think, about those veteran pitchers not having worked a lot, but that's been by design because they're trying to save the bullets for later.
Parenthetically, you played at a high enough level. You probably know the answer to this or just from interviewing catchers. What is the typical back and forth between a catcher and an ump on any given night?
Oh, it's different every time. Depends on the personality of the umpire.
Do most catchers, though, be like, I think you caught the corner on that one?
Keeping in mind that none of this is ever 100% because everybody involved is different. Umpires are different. Typically, when in the major leagues especially, and I never experienced this because I didn't play in the big leagues, but they see the same guys all the time. They know them. They know them by name. They'll be like, hey, Frank, how you doing? Good to see you again. Yachty, how you doing? How the kids? Like, there usually are some relationships like that. And normally, the rule of thumb that's always been there is, the umpires give you some leeway as a catcher to talk to them so long as you don't turn your head.
Wow.
Because then it doesn't
look...
I'm so
glad I asked that question.
Because then it doesn't look like you're questioning them.
Yeah.
So, like, You know, and this happened with me. I did this a lot as a player, you know, summer ball, whatever. I didn't play enough in college to do it in college. But you'll catch a ball and you think it's a strike. Hey, man, where's that? And he'll tell you, and you're like, nah, man, that's a strike. And then you just, but you don't look back. You don't stop what you're doing. You just keep the thing moving.
I notice this a lot. The batters, if the umpire blows a call, they'll just sort of look at him and ask a question. Are they saying, like, it was up, though, right?
Depends. But, yeah, a lot of times they'll be like, he'll call it a strike. You're like, is that going to be there all day? It can be, man, that wasn't there last time I had you. Or, no, that's a ball. It can be any range of those things. Typically, they try to keep it calm because umpires should not change what they're calling based on whether they're mad at you
because
or not.
I
but some do.
A lot of pleasant interactions.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm guessing they're saying like what you just said.
Some of it'll be.
I should swing it that next time.
Yeah, right. It'll be that like, oh boy. And a lot of times you'll see it even on like on a swing and miss. They'll look back and they'll be like, was that a strike? And sometimes you'll see the umpire like nod his head or say no or whatever. Most of the interactions are not super heated. Most of them are very calm.
How are our injuries doing?
Well, Sonny Gray threw a bullpen today. Mm-hmm. So that's good news. I saw the video. Mike Claiborne shot some video and posted it on Twitter. The fact that he's on the mound, he only threw 20 pitches, but still, the fact that they let him on the mound means that the hamstring's not a big deal.
Good.
If it was a big deal or if they were worried about it, he wouldn't be on a mound. So it's a good sign. He'll throw again later in the week, I think Wednesday or Thursday. So based on the timing being as good as it is, opening day may still be a chance. Hmm. May still be a chance. It's obviously not as good for Tommy Edman and Lars Nootbaar. We don't have any news on them. But this is the point. When it comes to especially Edman, no news is bad news. Because if you're not getting an update that, hey, he took batting practice today or he hit it against pitcher on the backfield, if you're not getting that, opening day is pretty much impossible for him. If he were to come back like middle of this week, you know, let's say he comes back and gets some of that action going by Wednesday or Thursday, well, then that gives him two weeks to get ready.
This is something
ready.
You would normally ask a doctor, but to your knowledge with Tommy, are they worried about him reversing the surgery? Like, oh, you snapped it again.
Probably not that.
So it's just more you're uncomfortable.
You don't want any of this to linger.
Okay.
Right? So you can push it on a lot of injuries. You can push it, but then what you're going to end up doing is extending the amount of time that lingers, which will diminish your performance that whole time. The idea is get to 100% before you come back.
How did Matt's look?
Not great. It wasn't bad. His stuff is good. He's throwing hard. I mean, I think he touched 97 the other day, but I mean, he's throwing hard. They're intentionally limiting the number of pitches that he and Gibson and Lynn are throwing now to save those bullets for later in the year. Stuff looks good. He threw 47 pitches in two innings, though, so the command wasn't really good. Mm-hmm. But this is what I was going to get to with the question you asked about the veteran guys. Like, with spring training, the veteran guys, their statistics don't matter because you just don't know what they're doing, right? Lance Lynn could be like, I'm only throwing changeups for this inning, and his changeup stinks, but he needs to get it down. He doesn't throw one very often, but I mean, that's just an example. Mm-hmm. You could have a pitcher that be like, my only goal in this game is to not walk someone, so I'm just going to throw the ball down the middle if I'm behind. They're working on specific things, or they just don't care much about the result, and they just want to get the work.
You know what I was thinking about? let's make this about us for a second. I was thinking about when I was a kid. I was as into sports as a kid could be, and I was super into baseball. And I played infield, and I played catcher. And I was thinking about every practice I ever had, and every practice went exactly the same way. And you would take infield, get one, get two, at shortstop, I might take 10 grounders in a practice. It's nothing.
No.
It's absolutely nothing compared to the way you guys do it now.
No, I mean, good Lord, you don't stand around at practice. So what you'll have, like, at the practices where we're running things, like the way we do it, you've got like a 20-minute warm-up, you know, running, getting the legs loose, playing catch, getting your arm loose, throwing long toss, doing all those kind of things. So that takes a while. And then when you do get to, like, where you're doing ground balls, you'll have three or four different lines of players with two or three or four different coaches hitting ground balls to different lines. So maybe you'll hit third base and they're throwing over to first. You'll hit shortstop and they're going to feed second like it's a double play. And then you'll flip the field and do the same thing. And then you'll have the shortstops throwing to first. And you'll do all these different things so that each guy during practice in a half-hour period is probably getting 25, 30, 35, 40 ground balls.
And if in one generation, I caught 20,000 ground balls all thrown to me by my friends on
yeah.
In the field between
yeah.
my mom, dad's house, and the Opal's house.
Yep, that's the and that's
a, what we did.
That's a difference. I mean, you know, I had the same thing. My practices when I was a kid looked like what you described. You know, a lot of standing around while the other yeah. people took batting practice. I mean, just like you're just chilling, you're
and
shagging.
No one hit in batting practice.
Yeah, I mean,
it's not, you know,
and that was even true when I was in high school. We didn't have the big structure in practice. You might have a coach hitting fly balls to outfielders during BP while you know in between pitches, but mostly it was just standing around. And then when I got to college, you could see that change. And now it's filtered down because of the existence of mm-hmm. what we have now with the like the travel programs and things like that.
Are we to the ramping up stage for spring training yet, where everyone starts to ramp up toward
oh, yeah.
opening
yep.
day?
You're getting it now. You'll see, for fans, if you never really pay attention to these things, when you start seeing minor league players sent out of major league camp, that's when it's starting to get more serious mm-hmm. because that means the regular players want more at-bats and more innings. So you're starting to see hitters, instead of going two at-bats and leaving, now it's three or four. And then pretty soon they're just going to be playing, you know, next week they'll play whole games just because you want to get used to it.
Anybody that we brought up just kind of, you know, what the bed so far?
No, nobody's been a disaster. I mean, like, Dylan Carlson's been awful. And it's a little concerning for a guy like that. See, yeah. right? With veteran guys, if they hit 100, who cares? You know what they're going to do. Right. If and Goldschmidt and Arenado are hitting fine, but if they weren't, if they were hitting 200, nobody cares because they're just getting ready. We know what they're going to do. Guys that need to prove something, it is a little bit more concerning. So when you look down at Dylan Carlson and he's hitting 143 and striking out, you know, 30% of the time, that's pretty concerning considering he's a guy that needs to earn playing time. Mm-hmm. He's a guy that's trying to do it. But like Wilson Contreras is hitting 200 right now. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. He's got so many major league games.
And how's he looking to you defensively?
I haven't seen much. I think he's only played 6-7 games and most of them are just half games. It's hard to tell. And a lot of times you're not catching your own guys and things like that. It's hard to tell.
Mm-hmm.
And the things that we would notice that are better, you're probably not going to see until the regular season. Like, is he getting better at being on the same page as the pitchers when it comes to pitch selection yeah. and how you're implementing the game yeah. plan? They're not game planning for spring training games.
Good report. Welcome back, guys. DGS and KMOX. Let's talk to Gerard on line one here. I believe Gerard is a coach and has something to talk about. Hello, Gerard. Go right ahead.
Oh, thank you. I was a coach years ago, but I learned my coaching from a B-team coach when I went to high school, and he made the game fun. I mean, and if it can help any other coaches out there, but he had his theory was you swung at every pitch in batting practice.
Interesting.
And it shot balls all over the place. So you, and as long as you kept hitting, you got to keep hitting, you know, if they got through and stuff. And you're like your final at bat, the end of the bat practice, you say, you know, if you get first base, you know, you stay on first base and run, the next guy comes up. And then, and if not, then you get back out in the field. But I mean, having balls shoot all over the place, because that's the problem with baseball with kids now. It's just it's boring to practice. I agree with what you said earlier. And he just had a way about him that made the game fun. He also took me my sophomore year into the equipment room. And now I'm 63 years old, so you got to remember back in the day when I grew up playing Catholic baseball, we didn't have baseball bats. We had like two. But he took me in there and said, you pick out any bat you want, you're starting, and that's your bat, nobody uses it. But that guy just made you want to play, and I use those things as I coach.
Gerard, what would you give to go back and have another of those practices right now?
Oh, it was great. We also played three-way hot box. I don't know if you ever heard of that.
Oh, yeah.
Three-way hot box. I mean, hot box, you know, it's okay, throw it back and forth. But three-way hot box, it's bang, bang. Pick up, throw it in the next base. That was fun, and I used all them skills, you know, that I learned from this guy, you know, when I coached and had some success. I only coached about 3 years, but I had some good success doing it because all the kids were inspired. But I, yeah. like I said, I learned it from a B-team coach at DeBerg named Mr. Murray.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Shout out to Mr. Murray.
Yeah. The younger the players, the more the fun should be.
Yeah.
And by the way, the fun still needs to be there as you're getting older too, right? The idea of like treating things like games or, you know, we create game situations where we play it out. You call it 27 outs and a team in the field has to record 27 outs. within 20 minutes or 30 minutes. And if they don't, well, then there's running. But if you do it, you win, and the other team has to go do it.
My last baseball playing is in the 30 and over league, and I got sucked into being the manager. And it's one of the worst things I've ever done in my life. Because you'd play like three games a week, and it's all grown men, obviously. And you might get 7-8 guys out there, and it would take you 2 hours just to get that many people. And we would play at Soge a lot, and it's like 11 p.m., and you're just getting bit by mosquitoes in center field. It was just awful.
Yeah.
Just awful. I remember I was 29, and they just let me play. And we're watching people over 50. Well, I'm going to be 60 this year. And we were like, someone should tell these guys to get back to Del Mar Gardens because they are embarrassing themselves. Mm-hmm. Now they would be 9 years younger than me.
Yeah. And look, my dad played till he was 74.
Did he really?
He just stopped playing this year. This is the first year he's not going to play.
Wow.
And he didn't play. He played little league. He didn't even play high school baseball.
Right.
He just, when he got retired, he's like, I want to have fun. I'm going to go play men's league baseball.
Well, I would imagine good is good. But being in better shape, because when you're 74, 75, you could have been the stud of all studs when you're 18. But if you're in bad shape now, you're in bad shape.
Yeah, it's all different. And then
you'll get
guys, you watch them. I've gone and seen a couple of his games. You'll get a couple of guys because it's like, depending, a lot of his teams were like 65 and older. You know, like that was kind of the teams he was playing on in his early days. Like when he was 70, that was the 65 and up. You'd get some guys that were 70 and they play like they're 55.
Yeah.
Like you could see the skinny center fielder who's still fast. You're like, dude,
yeah,
that's awesome. But yeah, I mean, like the older you get, the harder it is. But also, the older you get, the bigger the roster you need. Because sometimes you only play three or four innings because you get sore, you get hurt, something happens.
People die.
Jeez. And I'm only talking about the 45 and older when I'm talking about people getting hurt.
Mel, you're in. Why do I say things that people only think?
I don't know.
It's going to cost me my job one day.
Well, it's been a career,
though. Not today, though.
Yeah. Not this day.
Not today.
I just think it's funny how much baseball just like embeds itself into so many. Like, women like baseball, too, but guys love baseball, and I love it for you.
You know what, though, Ranch? For me, it was as much social as it was sports, because at least when I was a young man, you didn't just stand and talk. You played catch and talked.
Yeah.
Girls are talking about your parents suck, whatever it is, but you're always throwing a baseball or shooting baskets.
Or throw on a football around or whatever. Yeah, absolutely.
And that's how we did it.
And that's why we guys are sometimes weird.
Yes. Welcome back, guys. DGS 234. Let me talk to Rachel's boyfriend, Kurt, right now. She said it was okay. So don't kill the messenger. This song?
So whenever we go to baseball games, I'm always like, well, what's your walk-up song? And he says this would be his.
It's a good one.
Yeah, it's a fun one.
You're making a statement. Yeah.
I think so. I think he just likes the intro. I don't know. Mine would be Heavy Metal Drummer by Wilco, which I've used at DGS events to walk on stage and stuff.
Mine's always Have You Seen Me Lately by Counting Crows. So the first time it was Shoot to Thrill by AC/DC was when the very first time I did stand-up.
Yeah,
remember
that was fun.
And I came out and said, what sort of a-hole comes out to the Iron Man theme? And I changed it after that. George Rosenthal's here from ThrottleNet. You got one in your head?
No, a
walk-up song for you?
For me, it was the Iron Man song. Yeah, I was going to say that.
Well, you can pull it off. If a guy like me
can. That was amazing. Oh, that was amazing. I love that song. It's a great walk-on song.
Good jacket.
Thank you.
City SC, that's nice.
City SC. Had to represent. We went to the game for the first time, which
I've not been.
Is a party.
Yeah.
It's so much fun. It is a totally different sporting event experience. If you have not gone, I don't care if you hate soccer. You got to go just to experience the game.
Yeah.
We didn't sit for 3 hours.
Mm-hmm.
It was so much fun. And the flags waving and the drum corps and the on the end of the field just banging.
How are we doing so far? Wheels?
Well, they just got back.
Yeah.
Like they lost the first one, won the second one. Am I right about that?
Yeah, we tied. Yeah. We won one.
But they're not in MLS play yet.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good. What are we talking today?
Oh, we got some AI stuff, of course. We got some fun ones, and we got some interesting ones.
Somebody, one of you people, I read that just said that AI could surpass us by 2027.
Yeah.
That's the earliest I've heard.
Yeah. And well, I mean, one of the things I was going to talk to you about today was this completely ridiculous statement that I heard that large language models can do so much, but not everybody understands even how it's happening. And they recently had one of the models. I know it's crazy.
It's crazy.
Like, how do you invent something you don't even know how it works? So they, one of the models started doing math in different languages than it had ever been trained in before, but it started doing it on its own. So it was running math equations.
Isn't that kind of the definition?
I know. That's the thing. That's right. Crazy. Of course, it's not self-aware. It's not sentient. It's obviously just, you know, text model. But the crazy thing is when these CEOs come onto this and they do this article and they all report, like, we don't all understand how it works.
Could a, and I'm obviously pretending I know more than I do here,
yeah,
but could a text model ever become sentient, or is it apples and oranges?
It's apples and oranges. Yeah, okay. It's going to be.
That's like a piano becoming sentient and playing itself.
Correct. Okay. Exactly. That's a great example. No, this is all going to be, once you get quantum computing, it's a totally different world of how we process everything. But right now, it's all taking guesses of what it thinks should come next. But one thing that's, now here's the thing, humans can sway how the AI operates. And a great example of this, and I don't know if you saw Elon Musk through Gemini. So Google Gemini, basically, and this is completely true, you can go out and see it, they had to temporarily restrict how it makes images of people because it was putting people of color into historical situations that could have never been there. So, for instance, The Verge, they're a big tech magazine. I don't know if you ever heard of them. Great resource. But they asked Gemini to create an illustration of a 1943 German soldier. Okay, and that was it. They just always said 1943 German soldier. Every single picture that Google's Gemini created was an African American in a Nazi uniform. So it was inserting people of color wherever it could. So then people
started. Do we know why it did that?
Because I think they were forcing it to. So this is why Google has backtracked. They have since written apology and everything, stating that we were trying to force in so many different, you know, diverse. Exactly, to make AI diverse, but it wasn't accurate. It was making all types of historical images that were not true, which goes
that's
to
so
things.
Interesting because that is the politicization of it.
Yes,
I can't say that word, but trying to give it a moral compass in some way.
You're trying to give something immoral, and instead of actually, well, think about that, how that can change society in 2-3 generations of people.
Right.
So you start feeding that information early. By the time that generation has kids and so forth, now that's the history. So you're in basically changing history. And so that's one of the things that, again, when this came out and Google apologized, everybody started freaking out going, look, we need a governing body again. Like, here we are. We're back to the point of we need.
Let me ask you guys a related question. I learned history because I was forced to, and then later in life developed a love for it. I don't think my daughter knows much of anything that happens outside of her friend group. Do you think that kids now in general know less history? Because if you got, and her point is always like, any fact I need to know, I can know it right then. You had to learn it the old way because you had to put it in your brain. I don't have to put it in my brain because if someone says, who are the major generals in the War of 1812, I can know it in 2 seconds.
Exactly. Here's what's dangerous about that, though, Dave. We all learned out of textbooks that were written and approved by whatever governing body that it was that this is history we're going to teach to kids. Now, if I have freedom to go out anywhere on the internet and grab whatever I want from whomever I want, and most of which now is starting to be written by AI, how dangerous is that? Because now what somebody's teaching you that you think is real isn't never happened at all.
If it was in your desire to teach kids that Nazis were black,
yeah,
you could create something that was as convincing as anything else.
From articles to pictures to video.
That's haunting.
Yeah. And that's what we're up against. And
if you're a Holocaust denier,
yes,
you could create your own evidence.
Correct.
And not just bastardize the existing evidence.
100%.
Wow.
And that actually happened with Google's Gemini, which is why they had to come out with this written apology, pull up most of the features and said, look, we're going to go back and retool this thing, you know, to make it less everything inclusive. Because, look, history has to be accurate if we're going to learn from ourselves. If we didn't have history, humans would just keep repeating the same thing over and over again. But we have to have history. And the thing is, now it's being, you know, drastically addressed with AI, which is something we got to keep an eye out for. Now, a good fun thing from the nerd side, This is something really cool. Google's DeepMind actually can create a Super Mario-like two-dimensional game with just text. So you can tell, or you can show it pictures. You say, here's a picture of a layout. It'll create its own levels. It creates the gaming rules and creates the characters. So it'll build a video game from just
one that
text.
You can play?
One that you can play.
So if I said, I create a game of me and Wheeler playing one-on-one basketball, we'd have it.
And then you have a two-dimensional or 2D, just like Mario. So think Mario jumping around on the pipes and the pillars and so forth.
So it'd be like the old Bird versus Dr. J video game.
Correct.
That'd be Bird. Yeah.
Now, there's only one downside.
That's all right. I can dunk.
There's only one downside to this being so new, you know? It is new. That it only works at one frame per second.
Uh-oh.
It's kind of a problem when most games are at 30 to 60 frames per second. So it'll go really slow.
It'd make Wheeler and I look faster.
You guys, you'd launch across the screen in 1 second. Absolutely.
Boom.
Yeah, it's pretty wild what's happening.
So
in the
what does that do to real game producers? The fact that, I mean, it can't be too very long until you say, make me Red Dead Redemption, and it makes you something that's pretty close to it.
Yeah, that's correct. Or right now, they're actually using AI to generate all the textures and graphics that are inside the game.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of having to redo the texture of wood or the texture of concrete that's going to go on the street within the video game, AI can do all of that.
Okay, I'm going to ask you a question I've asked you before.
Sure.
It freaks me out.
Okay.
And it's sort of the simulation theory, but so I've watched Nick play a lot of games and Phoebe, like the Link games and all that and the Red Dead. So I'm riding my horse through Red Dead. And I go over a bridge. When I go over that bridge and it's in my rear view, what happens to the bridge?
The bridge just disappears. There is nothing there.
There's just nothing there.
There's a map on a server and it's identifying, it's talking
so
to.
So it only shows you what you would be able to see.
Right. So if you turn around, it's there.
Right.
Correct.
It's kind of like the quantum physics thing. Like it's only there if you're looking at
yes.
it.
Yes.
Correct. It's only there if you're really looking. Now, if you pull up a map, you'll see a little dot of where you are on the map and so forth. But the reason these games can work so quickly on the masses and the millions and millions, like let's take Fortnite, for example. I play that every single night. I don't mind admitting that. But you have millions and millions of people that
feels
have,
like he just had a breakthrough, doesn't it? He's like, today's the day. Today's the day.
50
be brave,
years old,
be
I'm
brave.
Still playing Fortnite. That's millions of people that downloaded an application that talks to a server, and the server just tells your computer right then, you know, what's happening just in your little bubble. And your computer's doing all the computations on who you're aiming at, where you're walking, and so forth. So to directly answer your question, the bridge is there, but not you'll never see it unless you
turn around. Like the most important question I've ever asked you.
Yeah.
What does quantum computing do for gaming?
Oh man, that's where you get into it will there will be here's the thing. There'll be no more
like no load
set
times.
Creation of a story. Think of the story changing as you play the game. So it will never be the same game again. And you will be able to walk into the saloon as the character. The bartender at the saloon is an AI character that says different things to everybody.
Now it's pre-programmed.
Now it's pre-programmed with a script that an actor
or
read.
Or even multiple choice script, but still pre-programmed.
Still a recorded script. This is, you're talking AI that's talking to you freely, an open conversation that changes with every single time you play it.
My retirement.
Don't you just think at that point, once the quantum computing takes over, like we all just willingly go into the Matrix because it's going to be so fun? I mean, that's the way I look at it. It's like if you can create a reality that's better than the current reality, most people are just going to be like, all right, let me get in that pod and never come out.
I mean, Apple Goggles is doing that right now.
Yeah.
You can walk around in a fantasy land and you could see real world.
That would be my stripper name, by the way.
Fantasyland.
Apple Goggles.
Apple Goggles.
Nice. That's great. Yeah, with the same capability and functionality.
I'm with Rach. I mean, Black Mirror, I'm sure you've watched that.
Oh, of course. Absolutely.
And in so many of them, they have a little thing, looks like a little lithium battery they put on their head, and they're in another world.
Yeah.
And, yeah, why would you come out?
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, it's weird to be all, it's this futuristic kind of stuff, but when you see people walking around with Apple goggles on, that is now getting to the point where it's real. So those goggles are only going to get better.
So that's sort of like when I was at Six Flags in the 80s and I saw a guy with a phone in a giant bag.
Right.
And I'm like, what the hell is that?
Yeah.
And now we have the iPhone
15. Now it's part of your life that's in your ear and
so
talks to you on your watch.
The Apple goggles are what in 30 years will go like, I remember seeing a guy with these goggles on.
I think those are going to change the way of computing, the way we interact with devices is those Apple goggles.
Let's do this. Take a break. Come back with more with George Rosenthal from ThrottleNet. If you have any weird questions for George, this is the day to do it. 314-436-7900-800-925-1120-DGS. 252-DGS. 3 p.m. We have Stairway to Kevin. We have audio. Dave Murray headline. Sweet 16 is the best dog from a movie or television show. What's yours?
Oh, man. That's
what,
a
what jumps
one.
To mind?
Well, obviously the stereotypical Lassie, of course, but that's old man talking.
You know that I would say Lassie never saved anyone from a well. The only person
I did not know that.
Yeah, it's worse than that. Use this. The only person that ever fell in a well during the entire Lassie series was Lassie. Lassie fell in the well once.
Mm. Yeah. Oh my!
Right.
I wonder how that whole tell us where you know. I don't. Maybe that was another show, right? But that's crazy.
I used to watch that too. You just reminded me that I'd watch Fury, which was made in the 1700s, I believe, about a horse, and then we'd watch Lassie.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah.
Well, can you? Are you allowed to put animated dogs in
sure.
the Sweet 16?
Yeah.
Then you
got
to
yeah.
put Secret Life of Pets in there. That's one of our favorite.
Anyone ever watch
movies.
All Dogs Go to Heaven?
Oh, yeah, that scared me when
that's
I was a kid.
That's a scary, depressing show, because not all do. So.
I was going to say, it sounds pretty sad, like it's sad, yeah.
I love how long we've been doing the Sweet 16, because now it's getting so specific, like,
right.
Best dog in a television show.
Only golden retrievers.
Right, yes, only long-haired dogs.
Yes.
What else you got for us?
Oh, so the one thing we had touched on just in passing conversation was that AI is starting to remember you. And this is actually getting into a really fun thing for me, nerd-wise. It can be scary for a lot of others, but AI now, so OpenAI had a spinoff company, and that spinoff company's only job was getting AI to learn on its own so that they could put it into robots, Kevin.
We're getting straight into, what was that movie now?
iRobot.
iRobot.
Yes.
Better have those rules put in when you can't hurt a human.
That's right. Those are the three rules. That's right. Well, so they've come a long way to where mainly this is going to be in the manufacturing world. So if it makes mistakes in certain type of large productions of manufacturing, it'll be able to learn on its own and make changes. The one thing I love, though, is that AI is starting to not only learn, but it remembers about you. So as you have conversations, whether it be text or verbal or what have you, it's learning your patterns, the things you like, things you dislike, your personality. And then it becomes more of this relatable thing as the years go by. Now, OpenAI has definitely put in a trigger event that you can kill all the memories. You can cancel certain memories if you want, depending on, you know, the past and so forth. But that's a pathway that we're walking down that is kind of scary, crazy.
Truly living the last fully human life.
We really are.
I
know we talked about it last time I was here. But you are not kidding. It is so crazy in the fact that you have AI that's going to learn about you and who you are and become your best friend. And now you really don't have humans interacting with anyone.
Live to my mom's age, which I think I have her genetics. I'll have an AI nurse.
Yes.
At my bedside when I die.
Absolutely. Yeah. That, yes. 100% in robot form.
Because none of you bastards are showing up. I know that.
I'll be gone.
We'll be too busy.
You're going to outlive all of us.
You're probably right.
Dave's going to be like 118.
One of these days when Andrew and Rach are in their 90s, they'll be like, "Wait, Dave's alive?" Hello. Like, it doesn't look that different, does it? She's just smaller and darker. I look like a voodoo doll version of myself. Like, oh my God, it talked to me.
That's great.
All right, thank you, buddy. Appreciate
it. Thanks for having me.
ThrottleNet.com/DGS.